Welcome in. The countdown is on, closing in on 2020, but time to talk a little hockey here. One last time in 2019, it's Pucks with Bernie and Panger right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. The hockey conversations are presented by Marie Davila Senior Living, Triad Bank, Greenville University, Fast Eddie's Bonair, and the fine folks at Urban Chestnut. They bring you the Panger Award. You see that on Fox Sports Midwest with our guy, Darren Pang. Welcome in, buddy. Happy New Year. Can I say that in advance?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy New Year to you, too, and all the listeners and all the Blues fans out there. I honestly keep looking at it. It says 2020, and I have to look at it again. I'm thinking the Jetsons are coming into town or something right. Like that.
It does feel weird, but what a great 2019. And the Blues fans probably thought their Christmas gift was June 12th when they got the Stanley Cup. But this team shows no let-up. I don't know that any of us – I mean, I knew they would be a good team, but I'm not sure we saw this coming in terms of them just almost being a dominant team right now.
No, we'd all be fibbing. Our noses would be huge right now if we thought that, honestly. I mean, you know, you go into it knowing that, okay, so they figured out what it takes to win close games. They were very comfortable in those scenarios. And, you know, and obviously win game seven on the road with all the adversity. Let's go back just a little bit in 2019 in June and go, you lost game six at home when everybody was planning a party. And everybody was disappointed. Everybody left the rink with their heads down, except for the players. They got on that plane, and I remember getting a call from Kelly Chase the next day saying, hey, bud, what do you think? Because he wasn't with us. And I said, I'd bet my last set of golf clubs that this team runs away with game seven. He said, well, that's all I needed. And I felt like it was almost a relief for the club. And I don't know if you could say that about too many teams, and led by Craig Berube, who does not let anything bother him whatsoever. But they got on that plane, they were just not jumping around, but they were just like, okay, let's go win something now on the road, and we'll bring it back home. And so you go back to that moment, which was incredible, and if I could just be so selfish as to say that was my most enjoyable moment, is going back on the plane with, you know, just the players and the regular traveling staff and seeing the Stanley Cup and the Conn Smythe Trophy there and the boys celebrating was unbelievable, and Joe Vitale sleeping while everybody was celebrating. Then I go back to now, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this team just doesn't go away. Like, they're shocking the daylights out of me, and I shouldn't be shocked, but at the same time, to ask a team that has won it all, partied all summer long, and to do this like they're doing it is simply amazing to me.
And maybe they're able to sustain this because of just the overall depth. It's not star heavy. I mean, they have star players, but it's not, you don't have one guy who scores all your goals. You don't have one defenseman who is just light years ahead of everybody else. It seems that because you have that balance, you can win a lot because you have an off night. If you just have a star guy here or there, you're depending on them every night. In this group, Schwartz can get hot for a minute, then he can cool off. Shen can get hot and then cool off. Because of that overall depth, you don't want to sound so Pollyanna, but this is the true definition of a team.
It is. It absolutely is. It takes all parts, and it is the sum of all parts. And, you know, I look back at the players of the week. Finally, a St. Louis Blue player won one of the first three stars of the week, and Jordan Binnington, after going 3-0 after getting a couple of games rest. You go down, it was, I don't know, if it was 10 weeks, 12 weeks, 15 weeks. When was the last time a Blues player won a player of the week? And, you know, it's because of what you just said. It's because it's a total team effort every single night. It's about playing the system, and it's about doing what it takes to win. And you know, I mean, it could be a Vince Dunn, could be a Justin Falk, it could be, you know, it could be an Oscar Sundquist. I'm learning a lot. You know what? That might be the best way to describe it. I've probably learned more about coaching and systems and philosophy and teamwork this last year and a half than I probably ever knew. As I've been in the game of hockey an awful long time.
You think Berube doesn't get enough credit for being, you know, cerebral in a sense with his hockey decisions? I think when he came along, he's like, he played. He was a tough guy. This team will be tough. They'll knock your lights out. But maybe some of those coaching maneuvers where he puts a guy on a certain line, knows when to bring a Sammy Blais into a playoff game and use him. And I just think his hockey acumen maybe gets overlooked.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's probably part and parcel to having a reputation of being a tough guy. Well, I look around the league, and I think the guys that had to play a role are the ones that understand the team concept more than anybody else. They do because they had to. They do because if they played 4 minutes or 6 minutes or 8 minutes, they sat on that bench, they watched, they cheered on their teammates, they put their ego to the side, and then they went out and did their job. And I often say that, like a goaltender, a backup goaltender, you know, a scrappy defenseman. I mean, these are the guys that I think maybe pay more attention to the overall game and the overall atmosphere and the overall locker room than the other players that are great players and have always been star players. But, you know, maybe they don't see that team concept the same way that others do. And I think I've always felt like Craig was an intelligent hockey guy. I've known him for a long time, played against him in the American Hockey League. In fact, I like to tell Chief that I might have saved his career one night in Halifax. I was with the Oilers and he was with the Hershey Bears. And there was a referee named Paul Stewart that came to our bar afterwards. We were having a fun time. And a guy named Alfie Turcotte, his son actually, is playing for Team USA in the World Juniors, a first-round draft pick of the L.A. Kings. We watch, and this Paul Stewart's coming in here, and he started kind of chirping at Craig Berube. And we're sitting there. We're having a nice cold beer, probably a moose head because it was in Halifax. And we're looking at him like, Stewie, get out of here. And he's like, you know, Chief, you think you're tough and all this stuff. And I don't know if Chief recollects the whole thing, but he does remember it. And I remember saying to Alfie Turcotte, I said, you get Stewie out of here, and I got Chief. We're going to go to the bar. I'm going to hang with Chief for a little bit. And so we got the referee out. We got Stewie in, and we hung with Chief all night long, and it was great. So I think I probably deserve a lot of credit for getting him to this spot today. Me and Alfie Turcotte. Well, you throw that in there.
Yeah, you might have saved Paul Stewart's life.
I might have.
Think about it. I love the hockey connections going back. Moose said I was thinking maybe a Sleeman's Brown Ale.
Oh, I don't think they had Sleeman's back then.
Or hold on, Sleeman's did the red maybe, there was the honey brown. Well, I used to, my in-laws, when they were in, not my in-laws, my sister married a good Canadian, Calgary, and then they lived in Richmond Hill, which I think is Binner territory. We're really...
That's the home of Stanley Cup champion Jordan Binner.
Yes.
Richmond Hill, Ontario, yes.
Many trips there and many different Canadian brews, and I've really taken us off the edges here, but I could tell hockey stories, I could just listen for hours, and I think the Blues fans, they love this stuff when we kind of get off. But the point is, Craig Berube's a hell of a hockey coach. We knew that. And he pointed something out after the latest win over Winnipeg about Jaden Schwartz. He said, I don't know if anybody's as good as him at the redirect, the tip-ins, the deflections. That's a skill set that I guess Schwartz is, maybe he's always had in his game, but you don't hear a lot of guys talking about how good they are in deflections or tip-ins. But I think he's right. That's something that Schwartz has really become known for.
Yes. In fact, he's amongst the leaders or leads the NHL in tip-in deflection goals this year. So I don't think that was a natural position for him, though. And once again, we go back to the head coach again because, usually you put a pretty big, like Pat Maroon-ish style or maybe where David Backes was here. He was always our net front presence guy. But, you know, I mean, Jaden Schwartz is 5'10", and... yet he gets in the eyes of the goalie. I watch him in practice every day. At the end of the drills, they always do some drills with the defensemen. The defensemen go D to D, and then they fire it. And Schwartz, he works on the tip-ins. And I don't think having hand-eye coordination by itself is good enough. I think you have to work on it. You have to work on redirecting it by changing the angle of your blade, by closing your blade. So if it's a high shot, you want to tip it low. If it's a low shot, you want to tip it high. And change the direction so the goaltender can't get a good beat on that. And I think that's an area that he does deserve a lot of credit for that. And his hand-eye coordination is really, really good. So I'm glad Chief, you know, I mean, he's got to manage a lot of different personalities and a lot of different egos. And that's where I think when I compare his coaching style to maybe Mike Yeo's coaching style, I think Craig Berube simplifies things and has no gray area. And I think that's why he gets so much out of these players. There's no false coaching whatsoever. It's here I am, here's what we're going to do, and if you don't like it, then work harder to do it better, or you're not going to play. So he's terrific.
And to the team's depth, that whole point we were talking about, a guy like Robert Thomas, maybe in a different market or a different team, would be talked about more. Here he just kind of blends in. But he has got some, recently even, some sensational goals. What does Thomas need to do to even take it to the next level?
Well, I think the small details of the game are important for Robert Thomas, Martin. And I think that he's still a kid that has such natural talent and great flow. And when he's in the middle of the ice, he gets to enter the zone with speed rather than being a winger and maybe a little bit more stationary. So what does he need to learn or lean to build on? For me, it's making sure that he becomes as reliable as possible and as predictable as possible to his wingers. The Berube system isn't one in which you go in there and give up the puck easily. It's a system that you have to have strength on pucks, you have to have patience with pucks, you have to protect pucks, and if you give it up, then that system goes by the wayside. So I would imagine that would be one area. Instead of that small little saucer pass that gets batted out of midair and knocked and goes the other way, be stronger on pucks and put them in sure areas. For me, that's probably the only thing. I guess you work on the face-off dot, and you know, if you're going to be a top six centerman or a top two centerman, top six forward, then you're going to have to go up against the other team's very best centerman. And if you're being put in the defensive zone and you're not winning face-offs, then the coach is not going to have as much confidence with you and to put you out on the ice. So that would just be another little area. But his skill level, his natural ability is it's phenomenal.
And what could go wrong? He's got a landlord named Keith Tkachuk, right, to keep him in line. And you know what? Actually, Robert says he does curfew checks on Keith.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Another young player we're seeing more of right now, at least, Jordan Kyrou. I don't know how long he's going to stay, but I guess a kid like that, if you keep scoring, it's going to be make that decision tough for them to send you back.
Yeah, I mean, and then once again, you asked the question about how does Robert Thomas continue to get better. It's the same bodes well for Jordan Kyrou. It's the competitiveness. It's the shift after shift after shift of being ready to go. And these kids are learning fast. And I think it's a tribute to the veterans that are on the team and how they are developing the young players. And, you put up with mistakes because you know they're young. And I've really, really liked Jordan's game. I'm really impressed with it. We all knew he was fast. We all knew he was skilled, all blah, blah, blah. That comes out of junior hockey. And we know that's good. That's a good starting point. But now it's about going into the video sessions, getting on the bench, getting ready to play, competing for pucks, and that to go along with his true hockey sense that he has, and he displayed that last night, looking one way, making sure the defenseman came to him, and then passed it not in an opposite direction, but a 45-degree angle where their defenseman had no idea he was passing to Jaden Schwartz, who was in all alone. So you can't teach that kind of hockey sense.
I'm sure you'd love to be at home New Year's Eve, but Phoenix, Scottsdale, wherever it happens to be for the whole crew, that's not a bad place to be to ring in the new year.
Not a bad place at all. In fact, I'm going to try to get a little golf in Arizona. And then because we're not broadcasting the game in Colorado, it's an NBC Sports Network game, I'm going to take my wife, Lynn, and we're going to go right to Vegas, right from Arizona. So cross the Hoover Dam, go through the Joshua Forest, and say, thanks for coming, everybody. We're going to Vegas.
Oh, what a great trip. I was wondering, these are longer flights. Are you in, because I need a new series. My wife and I are watching the Dublin Murders, I think it's called. But we need a new series. You guys spend so much plane time. Are you camped out on your iPad watching movies? And if so, how about some recommendations for our fine listeners?
Well, I'm just finishing up the morning show on Apple TV and with Jennifer Aniston. And looks like it's based on the Matt Lauer scenario.
Okay.
And it is strong. It's a 10-part series, and I'm on the 10th episode, and it is fantastic so far. Have you watched Peaky Blinders?
I think my wife started that.
Yep, that's a Netflix one. Tough one for a wife to start off on that. More of a guy's show to begin with, but you grow into that for sure. I'm a big fan of that. Boy, I've wandered through a lot of shows here.
Peaky Blinders, The Morning Show. I haven't watched any of these, so this is good.
Okay, well, there you go. That's a good start for you then.
We're going to come back. A friend of Panger, and also we'll talk superstition in hockey. We'll do that next here on Pucks with Bernie and Panger. Great to have Urban Chestnut on board. You know about their great beer and the great beer garden hanging out in the Grove. They've expanded. There's just been the explosion of craft beers. But boy, it goes way beyond that with Urban Chestnut. They have become part of the St. Louis scene. I love that Urban Underdog. If you haven't had it, it's a great American lager. A lot of beer snobs out there. I get it. My wife is a perfect example. Not a huge beer fan. I rolled out a little Urban Underdog. She absolutely loved it. So whatever your palate is, they've got a taste for you. You know about the Panger Award presented by the good folks at Urban Chestnut every single week. Huge hockey fans. And really, you can find their product now all around town, whether you're at the Schnucks grocery store, or if you're at a sporting event, Blues game. How about at the zoo? That's right. I had the Grizzly Ridge Kolch the other day. They have expanded. It's not just the great product. It's the great people behind it. It's more than just this beer that you're enjoying. They're part of the movement in St. Louis, getting things done and changing the whole area there, the Grove. And if you talk about the connection with the MLS, I think we had the big celebration with the MLS for the Lou. That was at Urban Chestnut in the Grove location. You can find them all around town. I started with the Wingnut. Still love that. Moved into the Zwickel. Currently just hooked on Urban Underdog. Check them out. Neighborhood grocery store, liquor store, guaranteed all around town. It's Urban Chestnut, part of the St. Louis sports community.
Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living. Independent living at the Villa Estate. Skilled nursing, memory care. They have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marie Davila. You are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com. We suggest you go online and schedule a tour.
Here's the owner of the world-famous Fast Eddie's Bonaire, Eddie Scholler, and Hall of Fame hockey legend Brett Hull.
Eddie, I was just telling some friends about Fast Eddie's Bonaire, and I just didn't have the words to describe it.
Well, Brett, I've had that same problems for years. The words I use are, you know, it's a lot of fun, it's huge, it's an adventure.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. This place is more than a bar. I mean, the coldest beer, the best live entertainment, everyone knows about the great food, but Fast Eddie's is far more than that.
I'll tell you what, it's kind of like, I don't know anybody that's been to heaven, but I'll bet you that's hard to describe too.
Well, I sure hope I get to heaven,
You're telling me.
Fast Eddie's experience is tough to describe, and all I know is it is fun.
Man, I tell you, we've been here 35 years, and it explains itself. I don't know if it's as good as heaven, but it might be heaven on earth.
Well, I would write it down in your notes and your phone, because once you get home, the experience is going to be hard to remember. I've been all over the world, and there's only one Fast Eddie's Bonaire. So if you're 21, head over to Clark Bridge to Fast Eddie's Bonaire in Alton.
Triad Bank, the neighborhood friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64. Get to Lindbergh and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, 5-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com.
Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community. A great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution.
We went blue!
All right, not necessarily a friend of Panger, maybe is, maybe isn't, but a former teammate, and I love looking at some of the stats. When the Blues and Blackhawks would play, it seemed to me, and this happens now, when they play Winnipeg, I always say, well, Line A is going to score. When the Blues would play the Blackhawks, I felt like Larmer always scored. I can hear Pat Foley's voice saying, Larmer! He had 441 career goals. Sort of an underrated player. He did win a Calder Trophy, a couple of All-Star appearances. When I say the name Steve Larmer, what's your blink?
I say the most underrated hockey player and underappreciated hockey player maybe in the history of the game. I think that And I watch, I go back and I watch some stuff from before because I know that the game has changed now. I know that they're faster and the blades are better and equipment's lighter and all that kind of stuff. But I've gone back and watched a little bit just to confirm in my memory bank, is he a Hockey Hall of Famer or is he not a Hockey Hall of Famer? And I would say on every given night, he was the best two-way forward that I saw. He was great offensively, but he was the one on the defensive side of the puck for Denny Savard that was always there. And as a left-hand shot, he was one of the first guys that I remember that played right wing. So he would take that puck off the boards on the right, and then he'd get that stick in the middle of the ice, and he would move that puck either back to a defenseman or get up the ice or right up to Denny Savard, and he was off and running. So as reliable a player as you'll find and played through incredible injuries and never complained one bit. And the last part I'll add about Steve Larmer is his best friend was Daryl Sutter. And when Daryl Sutter retired in 87 and became an assistant coach, he then became a head coach in like 91-ish, 92-ish, 93-ish. I'm not sure exactly the year. And Steve Larmer is such a good person and a good soul and wanted to make sure that they were friends for life, but he didn't like the way he coached. He didn't like the way he was as a coach. He liked him as a friend and as a teammate, as a player. And so he asked for the trade, which broke his consecutive game streak, which he never missed a game, except he held out to get the trade, eventually going to the New York Rangers and winning the Stanley Cup in 94. So that also says a lot about the man.
Well, we could do a whole show on the Sutters, too. I forgot Dwayne was one of your... Dwayne and Brent, were they twins, maybe? No, Richie, Ronnie... Dwayne, Brent, Brian. Anyway, I'm falling down the rabbit hole. It must be the end of the year. We're all just sort of loopy and having fun, and we'll do a show just on the Sutter brothers. Finally, I'll close with this. Any superstitions for Darren Pang? It's New Year's. Some people kind of have traditions with that. And in hockey, more so than any sport, we do see this. And it's a lot of fun stuff, too. The stick taps, growing beards during the playoffs. How about your personal superstitions?
I still, as a broadcaster, I go on rolls of wearing specific things. For example, it's funny if one goalie has played real well, and I've got a couple of rings that I wear, and one of them's a Memorial Cup ring from '84, and one's a Turner Cup ring from '90. It's been funny that I remember going through this, it was about 12 games in a row, and I'd have that Memorial Cup ring every time Jake Allen played, and he played well. And then I'd take it off and change it, and for Jordan Binnington, and he'd play well. It had nothing to do with the rings I wore, but I felt like, oh, shoot, if I don't wear that ring for that particular goalie, then it's not going to work for them. And I went through a cufflink phase as well, and I drive to the rink the same way if they win. So I go through Forest Park on my natural way from University City down Lindell all the way down. I love going down that way instead of getting on the highway, But if they lose, then I switch it up and I'll go another route.
Do you sense that players are they still? I mean, maybe it was. I don't know. Are they still as superstitious as they used to be? The players themselves.
Yeah, I think so. I think you'll find that most guys just do simple things: left skate on first, left shin pad, left glove, things like that. I've found that most of them aren't very superstitious with tape, whereas maybe in my day, if a guy wasn't scoring, he changed the tape a lot more than what I see here, black tape, white tape, thin tape, wide tape. But overall, I think the goalies would say the same thing. It's either right pad first or left pad first, and then things like that. Maybe where you put your stick, where you stand in line when you're going out on the ice beforehand. But so I would imagine that they still have a lot of little superstitions, but maybe not as crazy as what we had back in our day.
And, the morning skate is more of a tradition than a superstition, but Craig Berube a few times this year has already kind of canceled those. Do you think it'll ever go away, or do you think teams will start scaling back on that?
No, I think that does go in phases. I think it depends on your practice schedule. If you have an off day, and like today is a good example, they did practice, and, now they go into Arizona, and he may just say, that's an optional tomorrow morning. But if he didn't have a practice day today, then he would make it a mandatory, let's get on the ice, let's get the legs going here for before they play the Arizona Coyotes. So, but I think when the schedule permits for him to have an optional, I think he likes that. And then if they win and the players feel good, then that's even better. But the one challenge he has is he can't call them optionals because an optional is up to the player to go on the ice. And what he wants to do half the time is get Ryan O'Reilly off the ice because
right.
he never comes off of it. And so he has to tell him it's not an optional. There is no skate. And that's and there we go. There we go back to Craig Berube being very, very black and white and not very gray. If he needs to make a point, he's got to tell the players this is how it's going to be. You're not skating today.
I love these hockey conversations. You can download them, but also subscribe. That way they are sent to you directly each week. Google, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you sign up for Pucks with Bernie and Panger, presented by Fast Eddie's, Urban Chestnut, Triad Bank, Greenville University, and Marie Davila Senior Living. To Mrs. Panger and to Darren Pang, Happy New Year. Have a great trip. Have fun in Vegas. And remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
You got that, big fella. I know there'll be no hangover for me over there. That's for sure.